All right, I'd like to call to order the June 4th meeting of the Planning and Zoning Commission. Beth, nobody by phone?
Yes, sir.
All righty, as Beth just mentioned, we have Jim Dugan absent.
I'll make a motion to excuse Jim Dugan.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. All righty, as far as the agenda for this evening, it's limited in number, but from a time frame standpoint, I think we've got a very full agenda for tonight, but any discussions or...
I move we approve the agenda as written.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All righty, and then as far as minutes from the last meeting, everybody get a chance to review? Any comments?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes from 5-7-25.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye. I was giving you a chance.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. I know we've got folks in the audience likely for some of the specific topics for this evening, but does anyone have public comment for this evening? All right. Moving to old business. Bethany, we've got the carryover topic. Funny you're in the room, John. We may actually want to ask you something sometimes. So, Bethany, you want to start us off here, just kind of like laying out what we're what we're dealing with?
So, what we're talking about is in the code 11.20.010, oceanfront deck encroachment. And I think you all read through that ordinance last time, right?
Mm-hmm.
The issue is the ordinance doesn't really apply anymore, as Kama.
I'm not having a problem hearing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'll go up there.
Thank you.
I have a problem speaking sometimes. So the problem with this ordinance is that it doesn't really apply to today's rules with Kama anymore. It's talking about encroachment into the easement for properties that are within 5 feet of the Kama 60-foot setback. However, now, because we have the beach management plan, we get to take the setback off of the first line of stable natural vegetation or the pre-project vegetation line. So we have 2 lines to work off of. So basically, there isn't going to be any properties there within that 5 foot of the Kama line. So the question is, do we want to tweak this ordinance or take it out altogether?
Yeah, and so there are many properties that are as much as like 100 feet back from that natural point of vegetation. So if we were to eliminate it altogether, you know, we would potentially be moving much forward, you know, eastern. And in the event that we were to do that, then obviously we have to think about any limitations or, you know, what can go in there and so forth.
Right. It would be very difficult for me to make a decision on what can go out there just based on this ordinance, because like I said, it doesn't really apply. All easement requests now for any easements in the town are supposed to go forward in front of council. So that's what I would suggest would happen with this. Anything that you want to put into an easement should always go in front of council for permission.
Yep. And so, yeah, so do we want to leave things much as is and then educate council on kind of how all this works and the fact that easements may become something more of a natural occurrence, you know, going forward?
Well, we currently do easement requests for other easements in town, such as along Settlers Lane. We've done quite a lot. So council is familiar with easement requests.
Yeah. Yeah, I was speaking specifically to this oceanfront issue and this, and you know, it's one thing to say that, okay, you know, do we really need to deal with this today? I mean, the issue is really going to be going forward, as even though they're not potentially empty lots, as we were to have teardowns and things of that nature, you know, we're going to have folks that are going to want to push the envelope around how much they can do with their particular property. And we'd just like to get in front of that and have an educated perspective going in.
And, you know, currently as it stands, the easement, the perpetual easement for beach renourishment is going to prevent development beyond that easement line. So it shouldn't be going that far out. And do what has really changed is the Kama line.
Mm-hmm.
But using, with this ordinance, I would really not be able to approve any of the permits that went past that easement line without any council permission anyway.
So, is that clear as mud? Everybody?
Sorry. It's a very convoluted issue, so it's complicated. But, I mean, really, as it stands, this ordinance, it can stay in there. And like I said, I would not use it to approve any permits without council permission. Or we can take it out and it can just, any other easement request, they would have to go in front of council to request permission.
Why don't we just take it out if there's no sense in having it?
Yeah. So if we were, so specifically, what are you thinking we would take out?
The entire ordinance.
And that part of it is dealing with what?
So, I mean, what it's specifically saying is that it's allowing single-level unattached decks beyond this easement, but only within this 15-foot, and only with the properties within the 5-foot setback.
Mm-hmm.
So council would have to readdress this and see, do they want unattached decks beyond the easement line anymore?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, no longer, the criteria that's in this ordinance no longer applies.
Yeah. And, again, not trying to put myself in their place, but wouldn't they want some guidance from us? You know, so that's, you know, that's kind of where I'm
hesitant. I mean, the ordinance
hesitant.
Can also get tweaked. We can leave it in there if you suggest saying, oh, we can change it to you can be 15 feet, unattached deck 15 feet inside the easement, and take out the camel line thing, but then you're making it valid for the entire beachfront instead of just that one section. So
mm-hmm.
I think that when council put it in there, they wanted to specifically limit it to that one section where the easement line was that close to the camel setback.
Yeah. And then, again, for the benefit of the rest of the group here, so can you provide some perspective around why you think that was the case for that one section?
yeah, I mean, I think it had to do with when the development line got taken away and what was, there really wasn't any room for any development there at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have an answer for that tonight, but yeah. I think it had to do with the specific situation and the CAMA guidelines at that time.
So I think it really kind of comes down to, if we were to take it out, then it would kind of open it up to additional opportunity, but we would still need to go through the approval process through council. But council would not then be looking at this one limitation that's already described in there, right?
Right. I mean, this is just basically allowing me to approve it without going to council for this specific situation, which actually doesn't really exist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
May in a weird situation. But.
Yeah. So right now you have the opportunity to approve as long as it stays within that limitation.
Yeah, I mean,
you know?
Yeah.
Yep. And so by taking that out, then everything would have to go to council for any type of easement request.
Which would be the same as all the other easements.
Right. Yep. You know, the alternative is that we look at this as it's described, determine if it seems right. Or should it be more liberal? I mean, what has happened over time is the dune has built up, and that natural line of vegetation is eastward of what the static line was, right, in most cases?
Yeah, for now. Right. But the first line of stable natural vegetation is ever-changing. It can change with storms and events. The pre-project line is a measured line from before we started.
Yep.
So, I mean, yeah, for now, we have a good first line of stable natural vegetation in that area. I mean, that could change.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's ever changing and needs to be measured with each application that comes in every time.
Yeah.
Could you just repeat what you said about the first line? You just said that it moved eastward?
I mean, the dune has built up.
In front of my house.
No, I'm not saying everywhere, but I'm saying in a lot of cases the dune has built up.
He's saying over time since that pre-project vegetation line is so much further westward. That was the first line of stable natural vegetation before we started the beach re-nourishment project.
So like the static line versus the first line of natural vegetation. Do you know of any exceptions where that would actually have moved westward of the static line?
I mean, another beach town, sure.
No, but not here.
It's specifically in front of my house. I had to have my walkway made smaller because we lost so much dunes in front of my house. I mean, I took 6 feet of walkway off my...
Yeah, where we lost dunes, like on H Avenue, there's the first line of stable natural vegetation. Mm-hmm. Of course, wiped out. Yeah. I mean, it can happen. It can happen with any storm, too.
Yeah. Yeah, the only reason...
The first line is ever-changing, and that's why it needs to be measured with every PMA application.
Yeah, the only reason we were able to move to the natural line of vegetation, from, at least from what I understand, is because of our commitment to the beach re-nourishment efforts and showing a demonstrated every three-year cycle that there was confidence that that dune would continue to get rebuilt and that line wouldn't get impeded upon.
What happens if somebody builds a house right before beach re-nourishment's done, as opposed to right after beach re-nourishment's done?
Yeah, this isn't, this issue really isn't dealing with placement of houses.
Yeah, right? Guidelines dictate.
All right, as long as it's not placement of houses.
This is a town easement for the beach re-nourishment project. It's a little bit, we still, what we decide is allowed beyond that easement still has to follow PAMA regulations. So they're still bound by that.
And then in other beach towns, Bethany, would you, like with CAMBA having this 60-foot buffer, you know, are we being, you know, ultra-conservative by having it now so far west of even what CAMBA restricts us to?
Or, I don't believe so, no. You're talking about the easement line?
No, yes, with us having...
The easement line follows where the development line was when it existed.
Yeah.
It's actually the same line. And that when the development line was active, we didn't have a lot of issues. When our issues with limited development came, was after the development line expired and before we got the beach management plan. That's when development was most restrictive. We do have that small area in Sea Watch where the development line cut in. And then once we found out it was recorded wrong or something, the easement line actually was out farther, but they did not approve the development line going out farther. So the development line cut in there, the easement.
Gotcha.
So that issue has kind of resolved itself.
But that would be probably a good example if we were to eliminate what exists today and then move it through an exception process through council. You would then use that type of evidence to be able to show how you compare to other properties, even if the development line is further
Correct.
West yeah. than it would be
it
for
would,
others.
It would allow council to take it on a case-by-case basis.
Yeah. You know, which, and I didn't go into this with Bethany thinking this, but, you know, as it's evolved and knowing the variation that you have along the coast, and as you pointed out, Tony, you know, perhaps this kind of going through and getting the exception through council is probably the best option, in my opinion, just because it does take into play that variation, and each property would have to kind of prove its own merit for being able to get that type of exception.
Just to be clear for me, if we get rid of this, what requires it to go to council? Just the fact of an easement?
Or? What would happen is, if they were to apply for a permit, or they would want some sort of development beyond that line, and I would deny it based on if no development is allowed past the easement line. If they decide to say, well, it's just a detached deck, it's only 200 square feet, we'd like to see if we can get this put in, and then they can go in front of council and ask permission to encroach upon the easement. Okay.
So the first answer is no.
And they would have to sign.
You would say no.
And they'll have it
right.
taken okay. out. Mm-hmm. You know.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the only difference really is you can say yes to certain things now. You would then not be able to say yes to anything.
For me, so yeah, I mean, in theory, I could. I would not, using this ordinance, I would not approve.
Yeah.
I'm not sure there's any situation that would fall into this for me. But mm-hmm. yeah, it is possible that if I came across a situation mm-hmm. like that.
And what was that, 15 feet out from the easement?
It's 15 feet.
Yeah. So you can have 250 square feet, but the entire project can't go beyond 15 feet of the easement. So it's kind of difficult to do 250. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could do it mathematically, but practically, it would be difficult
well,
to do
it
that.
Needs to be detached and separate from the house. So it's just
on top of that, yeah. All right. So, any thoughts?
I'm confused.
You've been quiet.
I'm confused, and given that I don't live on the beach, the visualization of this is difficult for me. So mm-hmm. I'm going to kind of be quiet on this one.
I think rather than think of it as beachfront, let's just think of it as an easement, like in general easement, mm-hmm. arch range easements, or utility easements, things like that. Are we going to allow people to encroach upon them?
Yeah.
And we have stipulations to it.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually not written into an ordinance. So this one particularly is. Whatever.
Yeah. And there, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's already been, I guess it would be documented somewhere that, like pools, for example, are not allowed within the easement.
Pools, at one time, were allowed into that easement for a short period of time. They are no longer allowed. Council at the time actually wrote a memo stating they are no longer going to allow pools into the easement.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe the four or five pools that were non-conforming to that were in the easement have actually most have been resolved through
I think I'm the only one that has one.
Yeah, I think yours might be the only one that actually is still beyond that easement because I think the other, yeah.
All the rest, I
would have to look back and see. But
yeah, I think all the rest of them were in Sea Watch and that line got changed so they're no longer in the easement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because the line stopped, I think it was three houses down from my house is where they didn't move the line out. So I almost made it.
Hmm.
Yeah, actually, 1118.010 specifies for pools what it has to do.
Mm-hmm. So, other than some type of decking, Bethany, I mean, is there anything else that potentially could be considered?
I mean, no. Like I said, all development beyond the easement line would be denied. It would be them basically appealing to, well, this is a detached deck. And if council feels like they want to rewrite the ordinance to allow a small detached deck into the easement, then they could do that.
And then, I mean, not putting you on the spot from a specific standpoint, but if we were to remove this and then, you know, look at it as it needs to be a council exception, are you open to that?
If a resident approaches me and they want to go before in front of council, yes. I mean, I cannot deny them of that. But I would not approve a permit without council permission.
Right.
To do so.
Yep. So, and as you said, it based on kind of the case by case circumstance, right? Okay. All right, so again, what we're talking about is taking out what does exist with this kind of limitation opportunity within the easement and treating now all easement-related requests as a council exception. any more
discussion. And you've never granted an easement on your own?
I'm sorry?
You said that you're allowed to grant some of them, but you've never done it?
No, I'm not allowed to grant any, not without.
Oh, I misunderstood that. I'm sorry.
What I was saying is this ordinance would allow it in this situation.
For you to approve.
But no, I mean, there hasn't been.
Okay, I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Ms. White, do you have a recommendation as to what to do with that provision?
My suggestion would be to just take it out. We no longer allow development into the beach management easement, and we got the beach management plan so that we would be less restrictive for development. And I think that's done its part so far.
And there have been cases that has come through where those types of easement encroachments have been granted, but they have been conditioned as they need to be, right, based on what that particular situation was. So again, case by case. So like there were some patios that were built like back along Settlers, for example, that encroached into easement, but it had to be with the understanding that in the event that work would ever need to be done, it was the homeowner's responsibility for being able to have to get the material out of the way to allow town access to the site, right? Okay.
So I guess we need a motion, right?
Yeah.
So I'll make a motion that we remove the entire Article 11.20 titled Oceanfront Deck Encroachment, which contains Section 11.20.10 titled Oceanfront Deck Encroachment, based on our discussions.
Let's
on this.
Let's withdraw that motion, Tony, and make a more appropriate motion. You don't have the authority to change the ordinance.
We make a recommendation.
It's a recommendation.
Make a recommendation.
And,
I thought I had everything in there.
Yeah. And council, given that this is in Section 11, this would not require a quasi-judicial?
It doesn't require a quasi-judicial, neither does it require a legislative hearing, nor a...
Yeah, legislative. Sorry. Okay.
Okay, and since the only section is 11.20.10... If I were to make a motion recommending it, I would take out the entire article. 11.20 would be an appropriate motion, right? Recommendation.
I'm not familiar with the...
It's all it has. It's one paragraph. 11.20, 11.20.10. That's it. Then it goes to 11.30. So we're not only taking out section 11.20.10, when we remove it, we remove the whole article because it's not there anymore. It would just be a title. It would have nothing in it.
You want to take out all three sections of the article, correct?
No, there's only one section in that article.
He's saying 11.20.
Yeah. 11.20 only has 11.20.10.
That's fine. You're just going to reserve that provision for future.
Okay.
Okay.
So with that said, I will make a motion that we recommend removal of Article 11.20. titled Oceanfront Deck Encroachment from the Curie Beach Code.
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, thank you.
I just want to inform you that will be on the July council agenda, not the June. June, we're keeping very short for Mike's reception.
Okay, all right, understood.
Thank you.
All righty, thank you. That concludes old business. New business, we have a review on the special use permit for the CMIS Suites and Plaza. And I'm going to turn it over to council.
Chairman, are we at CMIS?
Just for fair disclosure, John's doing a ton of work on my house right now, and he's a consultant for them.
Okay, do note it. Thank you.
I don't see that as an issue in any form whatsoever. Council, I'm going to make some remarks about the function that you all are playing tonight. The remarks are designed for, hopefully, for your benefit as well as making sure the applicant understands his responsibilities when the hearing comes up in July. I'll start off by saying after 30 years of handling quasi-judicial matters on both sides of the fence, there is no doubt in my mind that they are confusing concepts for layperson boards to grapple with, whether they are decision-making boards or advisory boards. So I want to walk through some of the stuff in the article that I sent to you yesterday so that we can clarify exactly what your role is tonight, and I'll end with a recommendation of how you may want to proceed with that function.
Okay.
The first point that I would make is that there are legislative decisions, there are quasi-judicial decisions. Legislative decisions you're very familiar with, rezoning and text amendments where you actually review the request, provide a recommendation to council, issue a consistency statement, this chapter 15, and forward the matter to council. Quasi-judicials are entirely different. Quasi-judicials, by law, have to be decided by the decision-making board during the meeting when the hearing is held and based on material, competent, and sufficient evidence. The statutes do make it carve out an exception for an advisory role in pending quasi-judicial matters. It sets out a procedure that they call a preliminary forum where the advisory board will review the application and in that review process uncover any issues that the applicant may need to come back to be more compliant with, to develop more fully. May ascertain issues that council needs to be aware of. So this is a review function. You're not going to make a recommendation because for a special use permit, the recommendation would be meaningless. They get the special use permit if they prove the four elements, which we'll discuss in a minute, with competent material evidence. So the only recommendation you could make, which I've seen from time to time from planning staff and from advisory bodies, we recommend that the special use permit be granted if the applicant is able to prove these four things. So not much of a recommendation, but so unlike a legislative decisions are based on policy and opinion. The statute that carves out a role for you all in reviewing a special use or a pending quasi-judicial matter has an important caveat to it. It says that no matter what you do, it cannot serve as a basis for the decision-making board's decision. And again, that's because by law, the decision has to be based on the evidence presented at the hearing. So we've got a statute that allows you to become involved, but it also says quite clearly that whatever you come up with shall not serve as a basis for the council's decision. Chairman, that's why you won't have to testify as you did in the previous matter. One of the things I'll say about quasi-judicial, Ms. Chase and I are constantly tweaking this, learning new things based on experience, learning new things based on research, so it's very much a living procedure, like the zoning ordinance is a living document. It's constantly tweaked and fine-tuned. One of these days, we'll get it pretty 100% right. We're pretty close. So a couple more things, please. Just reading from the article, in a quasi-judicial matter, the question before the council is not what the policy should be, not whether the project is popular with the public, and not even whether the planning board thinks it's a good project or not. The only question before the decision-making board is whether there is sufficient evidence in the record to establish that the particular application does or does not meet the standards already in the ordinance. So again, you need to avoid opinions, personal beliefs, personal prejudices. Your job is to review the technical aspects of this application and determine if it's sufficient or whether more homework needs to be done. Furthermore, constitutional due process considerations and the North Carolina General Statute require that the decision be based on competent, substantial material evidence, which must be presented at the decision-making board's hearing by witnesses under oath and subject to cross-examination. Is the planning board comment on its review evidence that can be considered to resolve contested facts from the school of government? It is not. Can the recommendation in and of itself be, can the planning board's recommendation, if they make one, in and of itself be used to conclude the ordinance standards have been met? No. So your powers and duties include, but are quite limited, to provide a preliminary forum for review of quasi-judicial decisions, provided that no part of the forum or recommendation may be used as a basis for the deciding board. So that's the statute that allows you to do what we're doing, but it limits your influence to basically tonight and whatever information can be uncovered in exchange with the applicant. The applicant needs to understand that the four elements of a special use permit have to be proven by evidence that statements like in the application where the project is harmonious with the existing neighborhood, they're conclusionary. That's not, that needs to be backed up by evidence, and if the evidence isn't there, by law, the permit is denied. So that's a very important aspect to keep in mind. So I would suggest to the commission that it proceeds as follows. Do a detailed review of the site plan and determine its compliance with zoning ordinances and any other issues that might come up, recommendations that you might have regarding the same. Likewise, review the parking plan in the same way for compliance with code requirements and any issues you might uncover or recommendations you might have for the applicant. And then take the four criteria for a special use permit and ask the applicant what its forecast of evidence for each one of those things is and determine if there's any insufficiency or whether it can be beefed up or if something's missing, what should be added to the applicant's evidentiary showing. And let's review real quickly what those four criteria are. I'm looking at one of your agenda docs, 15-08080-D4-D1234. The proposed special use, in granting a special use permit, town council shall find, on the basis of competent material and substantial evidence, not policy, not opinions, that the proposed special use, one, will not materially endanger the public health, safety, or welfare if located where proposed. Number two, meets all the required conditions and specifications under the town code, hence my recommendation about a detailed review of the site plan and the parking plan. Three, will not substantially injure the value of adjoining property. And I point out by statute that the only way you can prove damage to adjoining property if you are opposed to the proposed special use or if you are countering such opposition is by an appraiser. A layperson cannot provide that opinion by statute. Number four, if developed and used as proposed, the special use will be harmonious and compatible with the area in which it is proposed to be located. And Tony, this is something you were probably asking that I just now noticed again, generally consistent with the town's comprehensive plan. Generally consistent. It's not like a text amendment where you really got to pinpoint the provisions of the land use plan. One final note, if the proposed special use is ultimately granted by council, and if the applicant intends to go forward with the development, then of course we're into the Historic Preservation Commission and Certificate of Appropriateness. Those items are not at all a part of tonight, so they only need to be mentioned. It is B1, but the fact that it's in the Downtown Preservation Overlay District or that a COA is required for development are not in front of us tonight. Any questions?
One, so at the conclusion, are we voting?
No.
So this is general discussion, and we don't come to any type of conclusion?
As the article puts it, it's like a dress reversal. You're just interchanging with the client to make sure everything is where it needs to be for counsel to make an appropriate decision and for counsel and for the applicant to meet its burden.
And then, two, given that there is a unique scenario here, given that all the members up here are also part of the Historic Preservation Commission, and we're hearing information in advance, which we typically would not. I know we're not talking about that tonight, but when that occurs, are we going through the same normal process that we would from an HPC standpoint?
Yes.
Okay.
You'll be asked during that particular proceeding, if we get to that particular proceeding, whether you can be impartial based on whatever. Mm-hmm. As long as you're impartial, you can proceed. You participate in that hearing. If somebody wishes to challenge that, then they'll either by consenting to or by majority vote recuse themselves. So if that issue comes up, it really is a question of remaining impartial. And you'll probably recall from an earlier HPC proceeding, you know, the instructions not to do extracurricular homework, not to discuss it with anybody else.
Right.
You're right. I guess the fiction would be, the legal fiction would be that you all are the Planning and Zoning Commission. You're going to take that information and use it tonight in this proceeding. The Historic Preservation Commission is a different body. And when it comes before that body, there's the safety net of determining impartiality. So I think we're okay either way. But I will tell you that the growing number of scholars participating in local governments, school of government, are of the opinion that because of matters like you just raised, and because of matters like I discussed in my comments, that advisory board reviews of pending quasi-judicial matters shouldn't be. And one of the things that staff and I are talking about is whether to bring forth a text amendment to eliminate Planning and Zoning Commission's review of special use permit applications for the reasons we've discussed. It just makes things a lot easier, a lot cleaner, and makes Ms. Chase happy.
Yeah. And I mean, an alternative to that would be that you would not have the same members on both Planning and Zoning and HPC.
Well, that's, yeah, but that's a much bigger undertaking. You'd have to replace the board.
Yeah, the commission. Understood.
I've got a question, and mm-hmm. this would just be for the record, but this is a special use permit process. Can you describe exactly why this is a special use permit process?
I think that's a question.
Yeah,
we'll get that. I think and Ms. White can correct me if I'm wrong, but when you go into permitted uses under B1, one of the uses that has an S at the end indicating special use permit is dwellings built in conjunction with permitted uses when the dwelling is part of the main building housing that permitted use.
Okay.
And permitted use is in D1 certainly includes commercial and retail.
Right.
But we'll make sure Bethany.
No, I figured that it was an S behind one of the things that we were looking at here. So. But let me just quickly also add one thing. You mentioned that only a real estate appraiser can determine value. I'm on the UNC School of Government right now. And it says, where an expert testimony is offered to establish, this is for the special use permit process, where expert testimony is offered to establish property values, it is important to witness be properly qualified as an expert and that an adequate foundation be established to expert opinions that are offered. And somewhere else in this, it uses a real estate appraiser as an example, but you don't have to be a real estate appraiser to establish value.
I agree. If you qualify as an expert, I agree.
Okay.
My question is almost mirroring what Byron asked, but from the town council standpoint, since when this goes to town council, that's going to be quasi-judicial, and they're only supposed to go based on what's presented to them,
right.
Is it appropriate to have Dennis sit in on this meeting?
Yes, because the statute says whatever you come up with is irrelevant for council decision.
That makes me put my heart into it.
No, yeah. Didn't mean to be so blunt.
Yeah.
No, again. Think back to my remarks.
And also, he said, we'll say he's impartial at the time.
Just want to
point that out.
I think it's really covered by the statute. Let's read that statute one more time because it's pretty short. 160D 3 or 1B6 says the powers and duties of the planning board can include, quote, to provide a preliminary forum for review of quasi judicial decisions. Provided that no part of the form or recommendation may be used as a basis for the deciding board. And to me, the other reference to this in the article, the dress rehearsal, that to me kind of explains what we're really here for. Because your review will inform the client. You know, when the client's represented by attorneys, we get to the bottom line. I mean, it's not, the issues are covered. When they don't have attorneys, even if the able assistance of Mr. Batson, you do run into situations where the layperson doesn't understand the legal nuances. So dress rehearsal could be very useful for the applicant if the applicant says, oh my gosh, well, we need evidence for this one or we need evidence for that. That might not ever come to light, but for this review and the exchange of information back and forth. Also, you're well competent to look at the site plan and the parking plan and make sure that that you may see. Don't forget, when council makes, if council decides to grant a special use permit, conditions can, reasonable and feasible conditions can be, the decision can be conditioned on the applicant meeting certain reasonable conditions. You may notice some of those in reviewing the site plan, the parking plan. As a matter of fact, the last time we did this, you all indicated proper, more, I think it was more signage for that particular use that involved converting the courtyard into parking spaces. I don't remember the name of the applicant, but you had a condition, and I think it actually went through. Oh, it was one more handicapped parking space, that's what it was. And to make sure the signage of the parking was adequate. And those made their way into the final decision by council. So that's another role that you can play in looking at everything.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, council. So, Bethany, would be appropriate to have you come up and at least educate us on any specifics that we need to understand as far as why this is going through the special use or special use permit process?
Well, I certainly can answer any questions. I think Jim explained why it's going through.
We're just confirming. So it is that one singular reason?
That's correct.
So it has to do with the type of structure?
The proposed is dwelling units above the commercial structure, which is in the permitted uses.
Okay. 1526.020.4.
Yeah. Yeah, we just want to make sure there wasn't anything else beyond that. And that's it. So parking ratios, all that kind of good stuff, you're good with everything else?
We'll get to that. It's conforming, yeah. Okay.
For now, yes.
Okay.
Obviously there's more reviews beyond.
Okay. But at least based on where you are now. That's not what we're talking about.
That's correct.
Okay.
It's a relatively limited issue.
All right.
And to Jim's point and your question, this came up, my presence came up the last special use review. And as long as I don't have an opinion and don't form anything, I'm okay. But to avoid that at this point, I will exit. Right.
Yep, makes sense.
Thank you. You're just trying to get home early. I am.
Yep.
That's a good move, right?
Yep. Thank you. All right, so Mr. Batson, are you going to take us through this? Is that the plan?
I think idea.
Okay.
Do you all have copies of the site parking plan?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Hey, everyone. For those who I haven't had the pleasure of meeting, my name's Adam Katib. I'm Sam Katib's son and work on the Idlethor Quick Mart. You guys might know about that location. Mm-hmm. To start, I think it's important to contextualize that Kirk Beach has been a part of my family's story, a huge part of my family's story since 2012 when we first purchased that business. And in 2015, we purchased the lots next door, and you know, we really saw a beautiful vision, and right now we're in a place where we can actually go after it. And we really think this is the best next natural step for us, but also for the town itself. And what we're proposing here, I'm sure you guys have had the chance to look at it. It's a mixed-use structure with commercial retail on the bottom floor and residential units on the top floor, top two floors. There would be 5 units on each of the floors, so a total of 10 units, and each of them would be approximately 1,100 square feet. When we started building out this concept plan, we really wanted to create a plan and a building that really does fit in with the character of Kirk Beach, something that is walkable and pedestrian friendly, and something that would really just enhance the community and bring something truly vital to the community. And in fact, actually, the commercial retail locations on the bottom floor, I know this concept plan shows, I think, 6 different units, but it's actually just split in 2 units. And those 2 units would be owner-occupied by my family, actually. So it would be a grocery store and a Kirk Beach-themed gift shop. You might be wondering what we're going to do with the current convenience store, which is essentially a mixture of a grocery store and gift shop right now. But the plan would be after building the structure and stabilizing the business there, we're essentially moving those businesses to this bigger location and then potentially repurposing that corner down the line.
So let me back up again, given that that is new information for us. We would have, I think, assumed from this that it was more than 2 units.
Yeah.
So it's a grocery store and...
So the plan would be to actually do a grocery store and a Kirk Beach themed gift shop. So this is almost exactly what we have in the current Idlethor Quick Mart. And maybe you guys have noticed, we carry a lot of products at that Quick Mart. We've had customers sell us like a mini Walmart. And the reality of the situation is that we're so close to the inventory management, obviously. We know we could carry so much more grocery products, but we just don't have the space. I think the current location is about 3,000 square feet, give or take a little bit, and we have maybe about 1,000 square feet of that dedicated to souvenirs and gift shop items. So we don't really have the space we want and we think the community really vitally needs in Kirk Beach to carry all of those necessary grocery products. Simultaneously, I mean, the same could be said about the gift shop aspect of the business. And I know, you know, most locals probably aren't buying gift shop souvenirs all the time, but that's definitely a more tourist-oriented business. But, I mean, there's definitely space to carry so much more and higher quality gift shop souvenirs, clothes, beach toys, different kind of beach umbrellas, that kind of thing. So we would really want to, maximize that space and be able to maximize essentially the amount of shelf space we have in those commercial.
And you're more than doubling what you have.
Yeah, exactly.
Gotcha. Okay. And then tell us more about what's above.
So the above, like I said, is going to be, or is proposed to be, 10 residential units, about each 1,100 square feet, 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom, or 2.5-bathroom. And really, these are normal condo units. They're not like the same types of units you'll see at the different motels in the B1 district. Those motels, I mean, they're very iconic and a huge part of Kirk Beach, but if you ever go into the bathrooms or the rooms in those hotels, they're so small. I'm a pretty skinny guy, and I can barely fit in some of those bathrooms.
Is this going to be a hotel or long-term rentals?
So at this point, I mean, to be quite honest, I don't know what the economy holds in the future. If I did, I'd be in a very different situation. But the purpose at this point would actually be to have more of like a weekly rental situation in the summer. It would be professionally managed by people that ensure the tenants are, you know, noise levels are down, good tenants, just like a clean area, just have solid management of those units. But in reality, if it makes sense, we could do long-term rentals or even potentially sell them as individual units. So really, if we're thinking about the more the weekly stay aspect of it, really our goal here was that what we noticed being in our business is that we have a lot of families coming to Kerr Beach, and that's a big part of Kerr Beach right now. It's a family-friendly beach. And they're coming with their kids, might be a husband and a wife and two or three kids, and maybe they're renting out two or three units at the motel. And that might not make economic sense for them. So then they might have to look at some of the short-term rentals that, you know, are on the beach or in the surrounding neighborhoods. That could also not always make sense in terms of the space issue. I mean, they might be renting out a 3,000 square foot house for a family of four. So we're trying to find that blend for a family of four to be able to come have a nice accommodation for themselves, have a nice vacation, and just essentially enjoy their stay at Kerr Beach. Yeah. I could also even like walk through some of the parking that we did here.
Yeah, I just flipped to that. So yeah, take us through that, because that one's even harder to understand.
Yeah.
It has to be. Okay.
So what we have up right now is the concept plan. The other plan, I believe it's the link right below the concept plan. I think they call it a parking plan. This is actually a plan a civil engineer put together, and this is probably more true to what the actual footprint and, you know, what we're applying for permits with. It's this one. If you want to go scroll up to the very top page, that might be the one with the most sense to look at. And
so, when you say the top page.
Exactly.
Like page one?
Page one.
Okay.
Where are you?
Okay.
So currently what we have is 19 parking spaces on the side in the longer part of the lot. And we have, I believe it is 7 parking spaces, or actually 8 parking spaces in front of the retail. And by code, if we're going to do residential here, I believe we need 1 parking space per bathroom. So we need 20 parking spaces just for the residential.
Right.
So we're meeting the 20 requirement. And technically for commercial, if you actually don't need parking spaces in the B1 district, you can have a business with no parking spaces. But I mean, that's something we definitely want, obviously.
And you've allocated 8 for the yeah. business.
Well, actually, no. 7 would be for the business, and 20 would be for the residential units. Just one of the residential units' parking spaces is in front of the business.
Okay. So, again, I'm seeing a three-story building.
Yes.
Seeing some landscaping and parking, like what is behind the building?
Currently, I believe there is one house that is directly so there's 2 houses right now behind the building. Actually, one of them is like a duplex of sorts. It's 2 structures, I believe, on a bigger lot,
mm-hmm.
and then another single structure in your typical 50 by 100 lot. So there's 2 residential houses right behind the building. Right next to the building is obviously the store.
And is your parking going around beside that building then?
It's
behind?
Yeah, so this right here is Fort Fisher Boulevard.
Yep.
This right here is K Avenue. This is where the current Islander Quick Mart
Yep.
This is the, it's currently a parking lot. This is where the structure would be.
Yep.
And then this goes all the way up to 3rd Avenue.
Yeah, okay.
We have parking spaces, residential ones on the side right here, yes.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was getting.
Is that one parcel or two?
I believe this is actually three parcels. We have, like, this half of this is one parcel right here, and then, like, two bigger parcels right here.
So you're parking, that long line of parking, that land that you all own?
Yes.
I got a question about, if I can ask it before I forget it.
Yeah, sure.
Your dwelling units, are they going to have complete independent living facilities, including permanent provisions for living, sleeping, eating, cooking, and sanitation?
Yeah, they would have a kitchen, obviously bedrooms, bathrooms.
Sorry to interrupt you.
No problem.
So yeah, so these are kind of like apartments.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to back way out. Under the property information section of the application, you listed as 102 South Fort Fisher, but that's the existing Quick Mart. Isn't this 106?
Yeah, this would be 106.
So that may be as a dry run something you want to change before you.
Yeah, for sure.
Go forward. I do know that we do have an ordinance on combination of required parking spaces. It's a little confusing when I look at it now, but it does require a number of spaces allocated for each use, almost like reserved for that use. The way I read it, and we could read into it a little further, but I think it's basically saying for the residential part, you got to have a reserved parking, and for the businesses, you got to have parking.
Exactly.
So we just got to make sure they have to be identified, I would imagine, in the parking area.
Yeah, they have, signage, and tenants would, mm-hmm. They probably have some kind of lanyard in front of their car as they park, and if we were to, non-residential people parked in a residential space, and like we know they're non-residential, we could tell them. We have some experience.
Yeah. And, also, item three, where it talks about how you're going to affect adjoining properties, you make a statement, the site plan incorporates screening and thoughtful buffering to protect neighborhood character. Well, you're going to put up a 35-foot-tall building,
and
your 8-foot fence in the rear is not really going to protect neighboring character, so.
Yeah, I think the buffering is still an important aspect of it, just in terms of ensuring people aren't crossing properties when they're on that ground level. In terms of the value, we actually will have an appraiser at the public hearing. This kind of development, and obviously I don't think I'll qualify as an expert on value, but this kind of development is, it generally raises property values around around the residential area, so mm-hmm. I think.
How does that work when you have a retail establishment butting up to a residential? How does it raise residential values?
How does that raise residential values?
Yeah,
Well, we're creating businesses, right? And more businesses closer to these residential houses. That's a part of the location factor of residential houses, right? Mm-hmm. It'd be very nice to be close to a, great grocery store. That's very convenient for the people living in those houses.
Okay.
Yeah. I think another important thing is the facade that you would put on that side. What are they looking at? Are they going to look at a brick wall with stairs, or are they going to look at something appealing?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a brick wall with stairs.
I hope not.
He mentioned we're going to have to go through the historic process. We are, working through our designs right now. Hopefully we can go through that process soon, or at least kick it off. The designs we're looking at and considering, it's just words coming from me, and it means nothing until you folks see it and others on the board, but it's a coastal feel. Think Curved Beach or Hilton Head type of feel.
And I wasn't bringing that up from a historic, just from any place.
Okay.
When you get a building built next to your house, then you're not going to be happy.
Yeah, of course. It's not a concrete jungle.
I Any other questions for him?
Well, if it's going to be sort of a motel, I definitely don't think we hit the parking requirements.
Sorry, what was that?
If it's going to be sort of a motel,
right,
and short-term rentals, I'm not sure that meets the parking requirements. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's not a motel. A motel would be, I believe it's under 425 square feet per unit. Or might be
tourist lodging, correct?
Sorry?
What is it?
That's tourist lodging.
Tourist lodging.
You're correct.
Yes. So this would be fully considered a residential unit.
Is it going to have on-site management like an office? Or, I mean, to me, that's a hotel motel is if you have something that says, you know, come in here and rent a room.
I think it does not meet the definition for the definition.
Otherwise, it wouldn't be a special use permit at all. It is the B1 district, so that would be allowed under permitted uses without a special use.
No, we're just trying to understand it. You know, I mean, it's a... Because I'm looking at this, the reason we're looking at this is, I assume it's D in permitted uses. Dwelling when considered in conjunction with permitted use, mm-hmm. provided such dwellings are an integral part of the main building of such permitted use. The word dwelling, you know, I mean, that's kind of a nebulous word right there.
It's defined in the ordinance.
And how is it defined in the ordinance, dwelling?
Let me read you two definitions. Dwelling unit, a single unit providing complete independent living facilities for one or more persons, including permanent provisions for living, sleeping, eating, cooking, and sanitation. He confirmed that was the case. Mm-hmm. But it's also the case when you look at the definition for tourist lodging, which is scrolling in there.
I mean, to clarify, these are, you know, apartments, right? So they have a kitchen, a washer, dryer, bathrooms, obviously, bedrooms, obviously, a living room. This isn't a motel unit or a motel room.
I certainly wouldn't call it a motel, but I've certainly stayed in many hotels that are suites that have the same thing. So to me, it's more of a suite, and I think that's even in the title of your his application.
There is lodging. The individual unit will be no larger than 425 feet. You're 1,100, correct?
Yes.
Any unit exceeding 425 feet shall meet the dimensional requirements of residential units. So it's a residential, these dwellings. The application contemplates dwellings, not tourist lodging.
Okay.
I mean, other than the parking, it takes care of the parking. If this is the only reason, in my opinion, the only reason we're kind of discussing about a special use permit is because the S behind 15.26.020D, and this satisfies the requirement of a dwelling, and everything is conforming in terms I don't know what more we can talk about.
Mm-hmm. You can inquire about the forecast of evidence for the four requirements.
The four requirements.
Right. No, but in terms of trying to understand it, then get specifically to those four issues. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I've got two more specific issues. In item two, you state the site plan is designed to manage stormwater appropriately. I've been looking for that. How do you manage stormwater appropriately?
Yeah, no, that's a fair question. I think, that answer is probably best coming from my civil engineer, Luke, who will be joining us in the public hearing. I probably can't answer something
okay,
like,
well,
that's like that.
Dry run, good question. Right? The other part of that is that lot now is basically a dirt/gravel lot.
Yeah.
So you're going to be changing your permeable to impermeable pretty much 100%.
Unless he installs permeable.
But something that may be brought up at the meeting? Mm-hmm.
I don't know the code well enough. It's permeable versus
Bethany, is there a percentage allowed of increasing your permissivity?
The special use permit, if you just
in the B1, it's okay.
Okay, one sec, guys.
There's not a limit?
There's not a limit in the B1.
Okay.
That's your answer.
Page 2. Page starts on page
and then
two.
One more thing. I saw on the site plan for the height, the elevations, you do go right up to the 35 feet, and then on top of that, you have a parapet wall that's 3'6", which is allowed in the height exception requirements. But the height exception requirements state, parapet firewalls must meet state and local building codes as determined by building use. I know nothing about that, but that's what it says you gotta meet. So I would leave that to you, Bethany, to make sure that parapet that they're putting on meets the state and local building codes.
That's correct.
Okay.
All right, so any other comments before we go through the application itself? All right, so as counsel had indicated, basically there's four questions that you all need to be prepared to answer with clear evidence, not just subjective opinion. And then, so first being indicate how the proposed special use will not materially endanger the public health or safety if located where proposed and approved. So we've read your response, and I assume that, again, having engineer involved in the discussion and so forth will, you know, be able to provide anything that you need to in that regard.
Yeah.
Okay. Two, indicate if the proposed special use meets all required conditions and specifications. You know, we've gone through what you've presented to us. We can't find any additional concerns at this point. Three, indicate how the proposed special use will not substantially injure the value of the adjoining properties or that the use is a public necessity. You know, I kind of quizzed you a little bit more in regards to how you would believe retail proximity would increase residential value. And as you had indicated, you know, I don't think you would be personally an expert in that regard. So I would caution you that in the event that you were to get that question from council, that you'd be very prepared.
Well, I think it's, if I can just jump on that, I think it's a little bit broader than that too. I mean, this is going to be a large building. So it's not just the character and the use of it, but this is a large building right here. And so, you know, I think that's going to be an issue, is that being able to show, and since we're just talking, I mean, we're not passing judgment on this as defined by our council. I think being able to show that, in fact, this will not substantially injure the neighboring properties given the size of this particular property. So it's not just the use, but it's also the structure of it.
And I don't know that it would be appropriate, but you know, it is kind of an open-ended thought around, given what you're doing with this particular property, what happens to the current convenience store, and again, does that create even a bigger concern in that regard? And again, as Greg
just, the concerns would you suspect you know, town officials would have with repurposing the convenience store?
Right.
And I don't think we can look at that issue in this discussion because that's not for us either.
Yes, and we can't. Again, I'm just, it's not to say, though, that the question couldn't come up. And it may not be an appropriate question, but it could come up.
Did you say that you're going to have an appraiser to do
it? Yes.
Now, just out of curiosity, is there a requirement that neighbors be notified of this?
Yes, the code provides
Have they been notified?
They will be notified until council sets the hearing date, which will be at the June meeting.
Okay.
The hearing will be in July.
And what exactly does that notification involve? I'm kind of curious. Is there a description? Is it just a simple letter, or is there a description of the...
We have a description, but the attorney writes
But the description will be of the proposal, you know, the...
Yeah, we'll succinctly summarize the proposed special use.
Will we post it on the property?
And mail it to the...
Mail, certified mail.
Website.
To all
newspaper.
The... Okay.
All right, and then item four, indicate that the location and character of the use, if developed according to the plan as submitted and approved, will be in harmony with the area in which it's located and in general conformity with the comprehensive plan and other plans for the area. There's reference in here about it complying or supports the land use goal. Tony, did you have anything else that you want to bring up in that regard?
I don't remember the land use plan that much, but the more I think about it, I know they didn't want, like apartment buildings and stuff like that. But this is where it is with all the hotels around it. I don't think it makes a difference.
And there's a reason to have this district, yeah, because they do want to encourage commercial development, mm-hmm, in that. So
I can even add a little bit more. I'm not... Because I think there's actually a stronger argument that this conforms to the land use plan. When you look at section 5.5 in the land use plan, let me get down to that here. And section 5.5 talks about town center. It says town center, and the example of a desired use is mixed use.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, if you're taking recommendations, I would make that point, you know, when you talk to the council, because it is right there in the town center that an example of a desired use is mixed use.
Exactly.
Appreciate that.
So, Bethany, based on all the discussions that's occurred, is there anything else that you can think of that we would want to flush out? These gentlemen this evening?
No, I think we covered
them. Okay.
Now, they are, even though we're not talking about, they are aware that this will be covered under
COA.
The COA process, right?
Yes.
Sir. Okay.
Right. Yeah. And then again...
Which was an architectural issue, more of an architectural issue, yeah.
Yep. And then you all are versed on that as well, given another day, but...
My architect has spent some time walking around the Fort Fisher Boulevard and the area.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a very unique sequencing here to have that be at the tail end, but that's just the way it is.
I think you folks will like it.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion on the topic? Council, you good?
Yes, sir.
Well, I have one more question about this, because it is kind of an odd sequence that we're looking at this. Things like landscaping, and even though this is not in our mixed use thing, I was looking at the recommendations for our mixed use, which is down K Avenue, so you're just missing it by about a half a block right there. But you may want to look at that if you haven't already, because there are some recommendations regarding landscaping, lighting, signs, you know, these sort of things, that even though they're not necessarily specifically related to that, because this is the B1 district and not part of the overlay, it is something that you may want to consider.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you've seen it, but Jim, I don't know if you're aware, but the lot right next to their parking extension that goes up the Third Avenue is where they're constructing that residence that was a future residence that was demolished, that we approved the change the code for that. That was an HPC discussion, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Something that somebody just said, if I was the applicant, I'd also look over the light.
The what ordinance?
The lighting ordinance.
The lighting ordinance, yes.
Would there be any concern that it's three lots and not one, that they could just sell part of it off and have no parking?
To be clear, in terms of like the actual like lots, we're still in discussions with our attorney on how do we actually want, do we want to recombine them, do we not? I mean, I don't.
You can't eliminate parking and be in compliance with the code.
What do you say?
Care. You can't eliminate a lot and then still be in compliance from a parking standpoint.
Yeah. So the building would be like condemned or something? Like what would happen if they sold off the lot and all of a sudden didn't have the required parking?
Bethany, any thought on that?
Could that happen?
No, they would
where the building is being built would be required to be one lot. And then I believe the separate lot would be the corner lot. And that can be repurposed, yeah, that could be sold off or...
But the build, so then they would not meet the parking requirement for the retail and dwellings above?
As far as I'm aware, if you're talking about the back lot, that's already combined.
He said there's three lots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's three lots. There's this lot stops right here. It's this. This is split in half. The frontage on Forfisher Boulevard is split in half.
So if one of the lots was just parking and that was later sold, and they no longer met the ratios.
Can I say something?
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually five legal lots.
It's five legal lots. That's what I want to say. Yeah.
They would need to be combined before this project would happen. And any subdivision would have to be approved by the town. It just couldn't be sold off.
Yeah.
Actually, John, I think they might have. I think they combined. It used to be, you're right, it used to be five separate lots.
But the three that are left would need to be combined for the project delivery.
On Forfisher Boulevard, there's two lots, 100 by 100 and 100 by 100. And the one on Third Street, it's 50 by 100. What we use in the first lot next to the store, 100 by 100, then the other half, that lot, 100 by 100, we're going to take 50 feet out of it, half of it. That way we're going to have 100 and which is the frontage, 200 feet. We're going to use 150 feet and leave 50 by 200 for the parking, which is, it used to be five lots. Then the city combined the two lots together. It used to be 50 by 100, 50 by 100, four lots in the front. Then they joined two lots together, 100 by 100, then 100 by 100, and the one on Third Street, they left it 50 by 100. And what we're going to use, the 100 by 100 and half the other 100 by 100, which is 50 feet up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just seems like what Mr. Batson had indicated would make best sense, given that collectively, with the structure along with the required parking, you know, it's the footprint of those three lots. They need to stay permanently together.
Right.
That being said, I mean, you know, recently did get my GC license, but I'm not I wouldn't say I'm an expert builder yet. But so maybe John or Beth might have more insight. But I'm sure even in the scenario that these lots stayed separate or the way they are, I'm sure this top lot that you guys would be concerned about being sold off would have to have some kind of tie to the parking requirements, maybe through a permit or something. So even in the scenario that lot got sold, the buyer wouldn't be able to probably do anything.
So Bethany, that would just be the point we're trying to make, is just ensure that...
Yeah, they would need to be combined.
Yeah. Okay. All right, any other discussion?
No.
All right, you did a great job. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Okay.
All right, unless there's anything else, that concludes tonight's agenda. So do I have a motion?
Just very quickly, can we talk about our next meeting? What's the plan for our next meeting? Are we going to have one in July? Do we have any?
I think we usually cancel the July meeting.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking, because I thought we used to cancel July and December.
In the past, you normally do for the July 4th week.
Yeah. So, Beth, I mean,
and it's. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So we've already handled tonight's issues. We don't have anything carry over.
No, that's correct. Okay. Currently, nothing on the agenda for July.
Okay. Can I ask? I mean, it might be relevant too. Is there anything on the HPC for July?
No.
We're the same. We're the same group.
Be down the road eventually.
Okay.
August,
okay.
All right, so we'd have a consensus that we'll cancel the July meeting?
Do we need a motion for that?
I think it's consensus, right?
Consensus? Consensus,
yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's okay. Fine with me.
You good?
And then make a motion to adjourn?
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Okay.
All in favor?
Nay.
Aye.